The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but in this politically hostile election year, you wonder exactly where God is. Well, my friend, he's in heaven on his throne, just where we would expect him to be. But yes, he's not limited to that. He's also omnipresent, which means he sees all, he hears all, he interacts with this world through his spirit, lives in the hearts of all who ask forgiveness of their selfishness, turn from their selfishness, and give their lives over to him. But maybe you're asking right now a more specific, refined question. Maybe you want to know where God is politically. Well, he doesn't vote, but if you're wondering where he is politically, you're not alone. In fact, another one of my listeners was curious enough, and he sent me the following email. And this is from Mark, who's written into our show before. Hey, Bob, would Jesus Christ be considered a conservative today, using today's standards of a conservative? I know a woman who says Jesus was a liberal. I disagreed. She said, it's in the Bible. So I said, show me or give me the book, chapter, verse, etc. And then the usual, well, it's in there, blah, blah, blah. You know that drill. But is there any passage I can go to prove my case? Well, absolutely, Mark. Although, now I'm not saying Jesus would join the Republican Party, because right now there are a lot of conservatives that aren't happy with the Republican Party at all. But if you mean, was Jesus a conservative in terms of values, there are all kinds of places we can go to. Now, many leftists would claim otherwise, some arrogantly, some innocently. To be fair, I do not assume that all liberals are arrogant. Many are sincere, although certainly sincerely misled. And so I will give your personal friend the benefit of the doubt and assume she means well. As for examples, well, it depends on which politically charged issue we're talking about. It depends on which liberal policy she hopes to defend through the scriptures. If we're talking about the subject of abortion, the Bible portrays baby John the Baptist as being alive in his mother's womb. When Mary, the mother of Jesus, visited her Aunt Elizabeth, and Mary was now expecting Jesus, her Aunt Elizabeth, of course, was the mother-to-be of John the Baptist. And I'm reading now from Luke chapter 1. At that time, Mary got ready and hurried to a town in the hill country of Judea, where she entered Zechariah's home and greeted Elizabeth. When Elizabeth heard Mary's greeting, the baby leaped in her womb, and Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. In a loud voice, she exclaimed, "Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the child you will bear. But why am I so favored that the mother of my Lord should come to me? As soon as the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby in my womb leaped for joy. Blessed is she who has believed that the Lord would fulfill his promise to her." Now, it also says there that this was the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy. For those of you who say, well, I think abortion's wrong in the third trimester, but earlier on, well, this is still second trimester. Now, if we're looking at another politically relevant issue, politically hot potato type issue, like, say, I'll just pick a real casual one, same-sex marriage. That doesn't make everybody go to the corners. The Bible clearly describes homosexuality as a sin. Now, no, that does not mean that God doesn't love homosexuals. He does. He loves everybody, but sin is sin, and we are all sinners. We're all guilty of sin, and he loves all of us, but that particular practice is listed as a sin, along with a lot of other things that are listed as sin. Now, I know that is not politically correct to say so, but it is biblically correct to say so, despite the wishful thinking of people who try to make the Bible say what they want it to say And in doing so, instead of living as a being created in God's image, they instead recreate God in their minds, making a new God in their image. Let me read to you from Romans chapter 1, where they talk about this practice. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural sexual relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, the men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed shameful acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their error. Now, I want to add to that, though, that later on in the book of 1 Corinthians, Paul mentions this lifestyle as one that a lot of the people in the church once practiced, but had since repented of and turned to Jesus Christ. So the verse I just read to you out loud isn't talking about God abandoning everybody or even abandoning anybody who wants him. The message of the Bible is forgiveness of sin. But before one can receive forgiveness of sin, they need to first acknowledge the sin. That reminds me of the story of the guy that went to a priest and said, "Father, what is the first thing I must do to receive forgiveness of sin?" And the priest said, "Well, my son, first you must sin." Anyway, we'll move on. If the issue politically is redistribution of wealth, coming up a lot with Bernie Sanders and Hillary, and certainly came up with Obama, redistribution of wealth, or what some would call socialism, this one's a little trickier. We are dealing with a phenomenon taken out of context by people, making it a half-truth. Of course, half-truth means half-lie, which means lie. The New Testament encourages very strongly voluntary redistribution of wealth, but not mandatory redistribution of wealth. The Bible makes it very clear that people have a choice. Liberals, and even certain evangelical Christians too, I should say, often point to the book of Acts, story of the original church in the Bible, as a biblical basis for redistribution of wealth. And I'm going to take a look at Acts chapter 4. In Acts 4, it says, "All the believers were one in heart and mind. No one claimed that any of his possessions was his own, but they shared everything they had." Wow. Well, I guess that settles it, right? People in the early church were socialists. Heck, from that verse, it looks like they were communists. In fact, maybe that's where the word communion came from, communism. Or we can read it in context. And for anybody who cares to actually study the Bible in context, you're invited to turn to a passage on the heels of Acts 4:32 that I just read you. Go on to chapter 5 and read the very interesting account of Ananias and his wife Sapphira, his lovely wife Sapphira. They sold their property and turned money over to the church of Jerusalem. But this act of so-called altruism was accompanied by deception. They lied about the amount of profit, having kept a portion for themselves. And with an intuition from God, Peter accused them of lying to the Holy Spirit. Ananias and Sapphira dropped dead on the spot. Now, before anybody's tempted to also read that passage out of context as some kind of tithing command, look again. The lesson here is not that people are too stingy. Peter only had a problem with their dishonesty. He says, "Didn't it belong to you before it was sold? And after it was sold, wasn't the money at your disposal? What made you think of doing such a thing? You have not lied to men, but to God." See, the money, according to Peter, was at their disposal. Yes, the New Testament encourages a giving, generous spirit. No, it does not teach mandatory redistribution of wealth. In the book of 2 Corinthians, Paul said, "Each man should give what he has decided in his heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver." So much for reading politics into a narrative that meant something much different. On the other hand, since Ananias and Sapphira lied, I guess it is difficult to read the story without thinking of politicians. People who use this scripture are often sincere, and there's no doubt that they love the Lord. I'm not here to judge their hearts. Still, the difference between mandatory redistribution of wealth and voluntary redistribution of wealth should be pointing out to well-meaning, zealous Christians or the politically liberal with an agenda to appeal to Bible believers. One has to do with authentic generosity. The other is just downright theft. By the way, speaking of theft and speaking of what the Bible says about theft, there's a much more basic foundational verse. Let's not forget one of the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not steal. That means everybody. That means crooks. It means a crooked government stealing from one person and giving to another. And no, that doesn't mean the government is being noble. like Robin Hood. Quite the opposite. The Robin Hood story, of course, is a legend based on a real man who actually lived, but we know very little about him. We know the legend, but even just looking at the legend, Robin Hood did not steal from the rich and give to the poor. Sorry to burst your bubble. He stole from the king, the government, who had taxed the people to death and made them poor. Those who were rich and elite in the Robin Hood stories were usually somehow connected to the king. So you see, not only does the popular, accurate Bible not condone redistribution, neither does the popular Robin Hood legend. This is Bob Siegel making the obvious obvious.
Robin Hood and Little John walking through the forest, laughing back and forth at what the other has to say. Reminiscing this and that and having such a good time. Oodle-lolly, oodle-lolly, golly, what a day. Never ever thinking there was danger in the water they were drinking, they just guzzled it down. Never dreaming that a scheming sheriff and his posse was watching them and gathering around. Robin Hood and Little John running through the forest, jumping fences, dodging trees and trying to get away. Contemplating nothing but escaping, finally making it. Oodle-lolly, oodle-lolly, golly, what a day. Oodle-lolly, oodle-lolly, golly, what a day.
As if you haven't figured it out by now, Bob is mildly opinionated about the ultimate issues of life. But Bob also respects the opinions of others. To offer your own viewpoint or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. 1-888-344-1170. You can also reach Bob through Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net. When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. wisdomworkschristianpreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Welcome back to 1170 The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Right before the break, I was addressing a question about where Jesus' politics would be. It's common for people to think of him as being more on the left, actually, but that's only because the left has hijacked words like compassion and tolerance, and they're not really tolerant. They'll shout down anyone who comes out to a university with an opinion different than their own. That's not tolerant. And the left seems more concerned about the poor, and they seem to like a lot of free stuff, but somebody has to pay for that free stuff, even though free stuff sounds good. Who's going to pay for the free stuff? I'll tell you, my friend, there's an old saying, and right now it applies to this. If you're sitting at a poker table and you can't figure out who the sucker is, it's you. So how do we move forward in this election year? How should Christians approach the next election? How should anybody, not just Christians, anybody who believes in freedom and democracy approach the next election? Well, sometimes the best way to predict the future is to learn from the past. Here are some things I predicted about Obama back in 2008 when many of my fellow Christians, fellow evangelical Christians, were planning to vote for Obama. It was an article in which I pleaded with evangelicals. Now, I would say that a good deal of what I predicted has happened, some items to a lesser degree than others, but most of it is chillingly accurate. When I talk about Iran, Ahmadinejad was still alive at the time, but the same principle of Iran applies. But I'm not going to change it. But I'm going to read it out loud, word for word. It was called Evangelicals for Obama, kind of like canaries for cats. originally written for Town Hall blog by Bob Siegel, June 18th, 2008. And I will read the entire thing. Have you heard the latest buzz about Obama? Now they are saying he may just capture a good deal of the evangelical vote. Well, let me amend at least part of the news right now. I am an evangelical, and I wouldn't vote for Obama if they threatened to lock me in a room filled with disco music by day and country music by night. So that's at least one evangelical vote he will not be getting. I cannot read the man's mind, so I will not call him evil, but rest assured evil will happen in our country if he is elected. And at the risk of making the understatement of the century, Christians are not supposed to cooperate with evil. I am going to appeal to my fellow evangelicals today for several reasons. First, this latest development absolutely depresses me. The fact that people are acting with sincerity and innocence depresses me even more. It is easier to appeal to the conscience of one who knows he is doing wrong than to convince a group of Christians who think they are doing God's will. Okay, enough introductions and disclaimers. Let me give my passionate plea. If I make sense to you, please do me a favor. Send this link to just as many of your friends as you can think of. Your friends who want to do right before God and who honestly believe they would be obeying Jesus if they voted for Barack Obama. My fellow brothers and sisters, I know that many of you are enamored with Obama, especially the younger generation. Those of you in your teens or 20s. There's an old English saying, young adults who aren't liberal have no heart, and middle-aged adults who aren't conservative have no brain. I am not trying to be insulting, only honest. As people get older, things begin to change, and they begin to see life differently. They get more concerned about our public schools because their kindergarten-age kids come home and say, my teacher says it's okay for boys to marry boys. As a philosophy, none of that stuff sounded so bad in college. When it hits your own children, you will feel differently, mark my words. As people get older, they also see how much money the government is grabbing from their paychecks, money they worked hard for. And finally, the longer we have been alive, the more experiences we have. Eventually, we encounter such unfiltered evil, we realize that all the peace marches in the world and all the negotiations on the globe will not make evil go away. I do sympathize with where you are coming from. You are compassionate, and you serve a God who wants you to be even more compassionate. I'm glad you are so loving. Your intentions are pure, but please listen carefully. It is crucial that compassion not be misplaced. Misplaced compassion is deadly. Misplaced compassion destroys lives. To hear Obama talk, one would think that all he wants to do is reach out to the poor and the disenfranchised. He wants health care for all and free ice cream for the kiddies. This certainly sounds compatible to the lifestyle of Jesus, so what brings me to the conclusion that following Obama would do nothing of the kind, would not at all spread God's kingdom, and would instead actually reverse the cause? First of all, Obama is a liberal Christian. I am not talking about his politics right now. The fact that he is the most liberal person in the Senate has been obvious for quite some time, but there is a different definition of liberal, referring to one with liberal theology. Most of the news about Obama's church has focused upon his hateful, controversial pastor. Although we should certainly be wise enough to give pause, we usually hear very little about the church itself, Trinity United, its beliefs, and beliefs of the organization it belongs to, the World Council of Churches. A few months ago, I wrote a blog explaining the beliefs of the World Council of Churches and the history of the liberal fundamentalist split within Christendom. I also quoted some of Obama's own Christian quote-unquote comments and explained how liberal Christians read the Bible. Instead of repeating myself, I have put a link to that blog below. Please read it when you are done with this article because it includes crucial information being left out of my present discourse. At the moment, just for the sake of continuity, you should understand that Obama belongs to a church which does not believe the entire Bible is inspired by God. The Jesus he follows does not claim to be the only means to salvation. His Jesus accepts abortion, and his Jesus also accepts gay marriage. You may have your own opinion of those issues, but they are irrelevant right now. If you claim to be a follower of Jesus, you must adhere to his views, or you are not truly following him. Sorry to make it so simple, but the Bible itself makes it just exactly that simple. And if we can't trust the Bible's record of Jesus' teachings, we have no other record. And we would have to ask ourselves what we really mean when we claim to adhere to the commands of Jesus. Obama's Christian foundation is as broken as a demagnetized compass, and that makes him a guide headed the wrong direction. Oh, sure, it may sound Christian to say that the rich must pay their fair share, but do you realize that rich people already pay 90% of our American taxes? Do you realize that our economy is better with less taxes, that lower taxes create more jobs and therefore even more revenue for the government? It also empowers churches and other charity groups to help the poor without all the government bureaucracy, which eats up most of the money. Even so, is it Christian for a government to literally steal money that hardworking people earn themselves? Yes, the Bible does talk about voluntary redistribution of wealth, but are you going to endorse mandatory redistribution of wealth? What is your biblical basis for that? It also sounds Christian to sit down with enemy leaders and talk to them, but are you aware that Iranian leader Ahmadinejad denies the Holocaust? Are you aware that while he issues this denial, he also promises to wipe out every Jew in Israel? Is it Christian to sit down and offer appeasement to a man like that? It sounds Christian to believe in a woman's right to choose, but does that right extend to baby women? Are you aware that Obama supports partial birth abortion? Are you further aware that this procedure is not really abortion, but infanticide? A baby at full term is taken 3/4 out of the womb only to have its brain sucked out. This is a baby who could have been adopted. There are more loving parents on adoption waiting lists than babies to go around because the babies are being murdered. Nobody is telling the mother she has to keep the baby. Would Jesus have compassion for children? Do you remember some of his warnings about those who would harm children? He said it would be better for them if a millstone was tied around their necks and they were thrown into the sea. While we're on the subject of Obama's Christianity and his beliefs about abortion, when Mary was pregnant with Jesus, was it her right to choose whether or not to carry the baby? It may sound Christian to support the California Supreme Court's recent ruling about gay marriage, but are you aware that this court overturned the will of the California people? 61% of them oppose gay marriage. Putting the issue of homosexuality aside, is it Christian to accept democracy or a dictatorship? Obama praised the Supreme Court's decision. One more thing. I'm sure you love your own pastors and churches. Do you want to see your pastors arrested for refusing to perform gay marriages? This can happen now that gay marriage is legal, and in some places, the law is already clamping down with civil suits. My friends, my Christian family, please, I implore you, something is wrong with this kind of Christianity. It does not even remotely resemble the Christianity of the Bible. The Bible warns us not to be taken in by charm or charisma or strong personality. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric, Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Bob Siegel's latest novel, Push the Winds Around, is now available in both ebook and print copies. Check out this customer review from Amazon.com. Talk about a good read. Have you ever thought, if only God would allow me to go back in time to right my wrongs? What if I could change those decisions I made? What would be the outcome? Would the changes make a difference? If you have ever thought about that, then this book is your challenge. The story is so good you won't want it to end. You'll see why it deserves 5 stars. Bob Siegel, you've done it again. Can't wait for the sequel. Push the Winds Around. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Thank you.
back to the Bob Siegel Show. If you were listening in the last segment and you joined us midstream, you were hearing me read an article I wrote back in 2008 where I was warning evangelical Christians to not vote for Obama because many of them were going to, and many of them did. Now, I read it exactly as I wrote it back then. When you, and of course, in 2008, Proposition 8 was coming. When I mentioned that gay marriage had been made legal in California, you may not remember the history, but in case that sounded confusing, there was a ballot measure to make marriage between a man and a wife the law of the land. That was overturned by the California Supreme Court because they said it violated the California Constitution. So then they came out with Proposition 8, which put it in the California Constitution. And then, of course, it got challenged again. And they said, well, the Constitution's being unconstitutional with the federal Constitution. So just so you know, at that time, it was at the moment temporarily legal in California, although it was being challenged. But I'm still in the middle of reading this where I was, in a nice way, imploring my fellow Christians. So, in fact, I have the word implore here. So let me finish the rest of this article. My friends, again, an article that was written in 2008. This is before Obama becomes president. My friends, my Christian family, please, I implore you, something is wrong with this kind of Christianity. It does not even remotely resemble the Christianity of the Bible. The Bible warns us not to be taken in by charm or charisma or strong personality. I know people are making stupid comments about Obama, calling him the Antichrist, etc. For what it's worth, I do not believe he is the Antichrist, but I will say this. The real Antichrist, when he comes, will be embraced by people who are thinking from their hearts and not from their heads, who claim to be following God, but who are not really reading his word. In other words, whoever Obama is, he is being followed for the same reasons that people of the future will follow the Antichrist. I'm not even blaming Obama. I would have a problem with anyone who is being followed blindly, even a politician that I liked a little better. Yes, be compassionate, but know this. If you elect Obama, babies will die in the name of compassion. Jew-hating dictators will be enabled in the name of compassion. Money will be stolen from hardworking people in the name of compassion. Our democracy will turn into a judicial tyranny in the name of compassion. And pastors will be forced to compromise their convictions at the threat of jail in the name of compassion. I have studied the Bible and the teachings of Jesus since the year 1977. I assure you, the real Jesus has nothing to do with this rock star type phenomenon, this wolf in sheep's clothing, this army hidden inside what looks like a Trojan horse gift. But don't take my word for it. I myself have no desire to be blindly followed. Study, ponder, and think about it. All I ask is that while you are thinking, allow your heart to cooperate with your brain. May the real Lord Jesus bless us and deliver us from the precarious condition of our nation, and may those who think they are serving God get to know his word a little better so that they can read and understand what the real God truly has to say. Okay, if you just tuned in, you are not listening to an old repeat broadcast from 2008. That was an article I wrote in 2008 for Town Hall, for part of my blog, about Obama. I was warning people of what was to come at that time. I was called paranoid. I was challenged by some fellow Christians to be more loving and compassionate. And naturally, I was told that anybody who didn't want Obama just didn't want a black president. The fact that he was a socialist who was going to systematically eliminate freedom of religion, no, that had nothing to do with it. Well, now we're back in the year 2016 in the current news. Current news, Trump, right? Trump, Trump, more Trump. Are you ODing on Trump? Well, it's in the news. Once again, Donald Trump spoke first and thought about what he said afterwards. Once again, his political opponents circled the waters faster than sharks on a bleeding swimmer. Pressed by MSNBC host Chris Matthews at a town hall meeting regarding punishment, should abortion ever become legalized, the once pro-choice but currently pro-life candidate said there has to be some form of punishment. Well, it didn't take a prophet to predict that Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton would weigh in immediately. And you know how she always just, that voice of his, if you want to make abortion a crime, you make it illegal, then you make women and doctors criminals. Well, equally predictable, but much sadder, was the response from Trump's remaining two Republican competitors, both of whom describe themselves as being pro-life. John Kasich said the past 24 hours revealed in the clearest way yet that Donald Trump is not prepared to be president. On top of all his previous inflammatory statements yesterday, he proposed punishing women who receive abortions. And then Ted Cruz weighed in. He said, once again, Donald Trump has demonstrated that he hasn't seriously thought through the issues, and he'll say anything just to get attention. Of course, we shouldn't be talking about punishing women. We should affirm their dignity and the incredible gift they have to bring life into the world. Now, Trump has since offered a newer answer. He said the doctor or any other person performing this illegal act upon a woman would be held legally responsible, not the woman. The woman is a victim in this case, as is the life in the womb. Okay, let's back up for a moment and catch our breath. First of all, Trump can say whatever he wants about abortion. He can't overturn it simply by winning the election. Neither can Cruz or Kasich or anybody. We can have a conservative president, conservative House, conservative Senate. They can pass a bill. The president can sign it. Means nothing anymore. It should. It should mean something. According to the Constitution, if that ever happened, that should mean that it would become the law of the land. But it was already the law of the land in many states a long time ago to outlaw abortion until Roe v. Wade. Should Congress and the president outlaw it again, somebody will sue. It will go back to the Supreme Court, and it won't depend on democracy. It won't depend on the Republic. It will depend on 9 justices, assuming that by that time Scalia is replaced, otherwise 8 justices. But I'm sure he'll be replaced by then, because nothing even close to this could get passed and challenged in lower courts in any quick amount of time. It would take years and years. So let's be clear. When politicians talk about abortion, they are hoping to win elections by sharing opinions that hopefully certain special interest groups will rally behind. Nobody believes Trump is going to do jack diddly squat about abortion. That includes Chris Matthews. In as much as objective journalists like Chris Matthews apparently bring up abortion with Republican candidates and hope to trip them up, pro-life politicians would do well to harness some better communication skills. Trump is not bad on his positions when he finally thinks them through. But communication-wise, the man is a double-edged sword. His greatest appeal is also his greatest liability. It's refreshing to see a candidate talk off the cuff without resorting to a lot of canned responses placed in his mouth by political handlers. On the other hand, given the amount of times Trump has walked his statements back or explained the next day what he truly meant, the man would be well served to occasionally say something like, well, right now, let's just concentrate on changing the law as regards abortion. There's time enough later to discuss the consequences for violating the law. On the other hand, folks, politically cautious words are just as bad. It's tiresome to hear candidates hem and haw to the point where they essentially say nothing. For example, Kasich and Cruz are not offering a whole lot of detail regarding how a new law about abortion would be enforced if they were the president. GOP candidates need not shy away from this issue. Instead, they should learn to discuss abortion in ways that make sense. They can begin by pointing out the obvious. While there is time to discuss future details, certainly there can be no effective law unless there are consequences for its violation. What kinds of consequences? That's the question. Well, it's hard to predict what lawmakers will come up with. Before we speculate, let me just say for the record that if it were up to me, if abortion became illegal again, I have no desire to punish a woman who had an abortion. I don't want to see them go to jail. I don't want to see anything happen to them. That's me. I think that's also the attitude of most Christians and most people in the pro-life movement. Having said that, if Roe v. Wade were overturned and once again abortion was against the law, there would have to be some kind of enforcement, something, right? Otherwise, who would take it seriously? Looking for a church that will not only challenge you, but help you to feel like a part of a family? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego near 94 in Hamishaw? I can testify firsthand to Skyline because I myself am a member. When you visit, tell them Bob Siegel sent you and ask about that free week-long trip to Bermuda for first-time visitors. They'll look at you like they don't know what you're talking about And you will not, in fact, get any free trip to Bermuda, but you'll still be glad for a chance to experience Skyline Church. You don't want to go to Bermuda anyway. Too hot. And people who approach that area have been known to disappear. But they don't disappear at Skyline. Those who visit usually can't wait to come back. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Well, we're talking about that whole Trump abortion thing. He mentions that if we pass a new law, there would have to be a punishment if the law was violated. And for that, he comes under criticism like he's some woman hater. Are these the times we live in? Well, I guess it is. If on university campuses, somebody can write in chalk that they like Trump and students respond as if they're traumatized. They need to go into comfort rooms and they're handed teddy bears. I'm not making this up. Even The Onion can't make up this stuff anymore. But look, if we, I don't want to see women go to jail, but if we pass a law, there's got to be consequences for breaking it, right? So what would those consequences be? Well, we don't know, but I would suggest they could be different for different people. For example, a middle school girl who in some states can get an abortion without parental approval doesn't understand what she's doing. A lot of young women don't understand what they're doing. They're surrounded by people who describe the fetus as nothing more than some tissue. They're not setting out to kill. And because they do not see the fetus as a human being, because they're mistaken, awfully sincerely mistaken, maybe the person that should be blamed is the doctor performing the procedure that knows exactly what he or she is doing. And there are other differences. Abortion for cases of rape and the mother's health, I still think they're wrong. But that's a motivation that we can at least understand. It's in a completely separate category from abortion by convenience. So the stated law could make exceptions, or depending on how vague the law is, judges or juries could take such situations into consideration. This does not have to be one size fits all. We need not assume that every abortion would invoke jail time. Now, there are a variety of other options, from the financial to public service to a mercifully suspended sentence to no sentence at all, depending on the situation. And again, for me personally, I would say no sentence at all for the women, yes, a sentence for the doctors. Once again, keep in mind that the Christian wing of the pro-life movement, for the most part, is not about punishment. Their aim is to see the practice stopped and to offer forgiveness. This is about the human rights of the unborn baby. This is not about jail time. Far more important than discussion of consequences is discussion of the abortion practice itself. Here, once again, pro-life candidates could benefit from a better choice of words. When conservatives speak out against abortion, they're swiftly portrayed as being anti-women, even though most of the leading activists in the pro-life movement are women, not men, women. There's even an organization called Feminists for Life. Let me read you their mission statement. Feminists for Life of America recognizes that abortion is a reflection that our society has failed to meet the needs of women. We are dedicated to systematically eliminating the root causes that drive a woman to abortion. Primarily lack of practical resources and support through holistic, woman-centered solutions. Women deserve better than abortion. Contrary to media portrayal and Democratic talking points with its war on women accusations, conservatives care very much about women. But as I said on last week's show, they also care about baby women. And they don't believe babies are property simply because of a geographical location like the womb, with better arguments. We might just turn the tables. It would be nice to see the liberal candidates and pundits sweat for a change. Well, last week, I spent the entire program talking about faith healing. If you missed that show, you can still find it posted to my website. I also wrote a corresponding article, and that's on my website too. It's entitled A Biblical Case for Authentic Healing. But back to last week's show, we ran out of time, and I was unable to add a very important point about what I referred to as the proper usage of a healing gift. The question was, if somebody has the gift of healing, this is somebody who lays hands on others and the others get healed, are they guaranteed that every time they use the gift, the recipient will be healed? Well, my answer was worded very carefully. And let me say it very carefully again. If the gift is properly used, yes, but that's a big, big if. The verses often taken out of context about faith forget an important point. Let me illustrate. Abraham's faith in God was based on a reaction to what God had told him. His wife was beyond the age of bearing children, and God spoke to Abraham to tell him that she would bear a son despite her many years. Abraham did believe God with great faith. However, and this is very important, it was God's idea, not Abraham's. Abraham did not merely sit under a tree someday and do name it, claim it. Certainly, he may have asked God for a son at various times in his life, and I would be surprised if he had, but that is not the same as saying to himself one day, as I'm thinking this through, even though Sarah is unable to have a son, I think I'll just claim a son anyway and have faith to trust that God will do as my faith commands. No, God's not a genie in a bottle. We don't command him. He commands us. And so it is with modern healing. If God speaks to the person who is sick, or perhaps speaks to the one called into a healing ministry and actually tells them that he means to heal them, then of course God wants us to believe him and put our faith in his promise. But we do not claim promises that God never actually gave. In college, while attending San Jose State University, I took a friend named Carrie to hear a faith healer preach. Now, Carrie was very shy. For her to get up out of her seat at the invitation of a faith healer in front of hundreds of people was an act of faith at the very least. And as I mentioned last week, Jesus said even the weakest amount of faith heals. Remember, I was sharing about how the man said to him, I want you to heal my son. Jesus says, do you believe? He says, I believe. Help me in my unbelief. Believe me, if Carrie was getting out of her chair, she was saying, God, I believe. Help me in her unbelief. Well, too bad all she did was go home after being lied to. Too bad somebody told her she didn't have enough faith. What happened with Carrie? What happened with the faith? That seems like such a magic word these days with most of our Christian healers. God will heal anybody so long as they have faith. Well, let me tell you what they said to Carrie when we return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Is there really proof for the resurrection of Christ? How could a loving God send people to hell? Why does the Bible call premarital sex a sin? How will God judge the people who never heard of Jesus? These are but some of the critical concerns keeping honest seekers from considering Christianity. In an interesting, down-to-earth style, Bob Siegel tackles the hardest, most painfully honest questions. Rather than shoving these topics under the rug, Bob shows respect for his readers by providing detailed and compelling explanations. This book will be enjoyed by both skeptics and Christians. I'd like to believe in Jesus, but available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
We're wrapping up the topic of faith healing that we started on last week's show. I was sharing a story back when I was in college. There was somebody named Carrie, and she struggled with asthma. Very shy person, but she went to a faith healing service, and when the guy said, come forward for healing, she got up. And I was mentioning that Jesus says even the weakest amount of faith is enough. You have the faith of a grain of mustard seed. He says, that's enough. So I went with her for moral support. She went forward again for asthma. Preacher lays hands on Carrie, and I'll never forget his words. We've been talking a lot about politics today. Let's hear some political words from a faith here. He lays hands on her, and he says this, okay, I think the Holy Spirit really is working. There may be a setback from Satan. I think what you need to do is just claim it by faith. Wow. Now, at the risk of sounding very unspiritual, a bunch of whitewashed mumbo jumbo came out of this minister's mouth. How do you like these characters? If you don't get healed, you're the problem. After all, they are promising to heal everybody, anybody, and they will look quite stupid if people come forward and don't get this marketed product called healing. Therefore, the lack of faith clause bails them out. If you don't get healed, it's only because you did not have enough faith. Now, look, I told you I believe in authentic faith healers. So let me tell you, an authentic faith healer prays with you and asks guidance from God. Sometimes it's God's will to heal. Sometimes God decides we need to endure, like he did with Paul's physical ailment that's nicknamed the thorn in the flesh. Sometimes God's ready to call us home. Isaac knew that it was time to die. His time had come. It had come. So he called his sons to bless him. And so, yes, faith, but faith in what God promises. If God speaks and says, I'll heal you. Yes, he wants us to have faith. If he hasn't told us what he's going to do, we don't tell him what to do. We ask him what he wants to do. Well, we talk a lot about movies and politics and religion on this show. I think a movie that kind of had a little bit of a religious tint and was very political in the sense that it talked about kings and good and evil and was also a remarkable film was The Fellowship of the Ring. And the very first words of The Fellowship of the Ring were a whisper, the world is changing. And I'll tell you what they meant by that and how I'm going to apply it. But first, we have James on the line. James, welcome to the Bob Siegel Show.
Hello, Mr. Siegel. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, it's a pleasure. How are you doing today?
I'm okay. I'm a Christian. I grew up Catholic, and my premise really for calling was that, and this is based on personal experience, a bit of a embittered attitude I have right now. My belief is that I do believe in God, but I believe that He is indifferent to our suffering, my suffering, your suffering, suffering of our loved ones, and that prayer for the healing of loved ones, in my experience, it seems to be pointless. I don't think anybody really cares. Anybody's listening. Maybe listening, but I don't think they're, as I said, I think it's, there's indifference. Am I wrong?
Has there been something recently that comes to your mind? Has there been a recent tragedy or recent illness that you pleaded with God for?
There has. I lost a mother and a father when I was fairly young.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I mean, I recognize, one died of cancer, the other of heart disease, but I recognize that they brought upon those illnesses by smoking and so forth. I understand that. But my feeling is that, you've heard it's a Doors song. You cannot petition the Lord with prayer. Probably know that line. I kind of believe that. I don't know what the point of prayer is, other than to self-ingratiate oneself to worship and getting good graces. But I mean, as far as the movie, obviously, who am I? Who's any of us? Who are any of us to try to move God towards? To do something, that obviously is not his plan, but I don't know. I just think that, God may be just indifferent.
My friend, you're bringing up a lot of good points. And before I address them, and I will start addressing them, we're down to the last few minutes of our show. And what I want to do ahead of time, though, is we'll probably still be in the middle of this when we sign off. I want to invite you to call back in next week, if you want to, and we can have an even more...
I enjoy your show.
Oh, good. Well, then let me just right off the top invite you to call next week and we'll continue this. But let's begin it right now. First of all, and this is the most important thing, if you have been praying to God and your prayers have not been answered, particularly if you're praying for loved ones to get better and you've lost people or just to see people suffer, I am so sorry that happened. And I don't blame you at all. I really don't blame you at all for wondering where God is during a situation like that. But to answer your question, what the purpose is of prayer, primarily, The purpose of prayer is to have fellowship and a relationship with God. Like in any relationship, I have relationships with human beings, and sometimes I ask them to do something, and sometimes they do, and sometimes they don't, and sometimes they have good reason not to. The best analogy that the Bible uses with God is the analogy of a parent. Now, I raised two kids. My daughter's about to give birth in May. I'm going to be a grandfather for the first time. When my kids were little, I loved them so much. I would have done anything to make them happy. But there were times they asked for things that I could not give them. Daddy, why can't we play in a sewer? What's wrong with that? Daddy, why can't I have more candy? Actually, I'm just using an example. My kids didn't actually ask about a sewer, but you get my point. They asked about doing things. They could be listening right now, so I got to be careful. They could ask for things that I, as their dad, know that they just shouldn't have. Sometimes God says no. Now, the other side of it, though, is that a lot of times he does say yes. And I want to ask you, you mentioned that you've grown up in the church. Have you ever, because prayer, it's not just about us praying to God. The Bible actually says that we can have a relationship with God in which God will speak to us too. And that may or may not include an audible voice, but when you read about the people in the Bible, you'll notice you're seeing them praying, but you're noticing that God's communicating with them a lot. Well, I don't know how much you studied the Bible, but I'm sure even if you just see movies like the Ten Commandments, you know, God spoke to Moses, spoke to Abraham. Mm-hmm. I mentioned just now that he spoke. Have you had an opportunity to go to God in prayer and pray the very first thing that God would like to hear, which is, God, I want to be forgiven of my sins and I want to enter into a relationship with you? And I'm not assuming you have it. I'm just asking you because I lived the first 20 years of my life. I was brought up in a Jewish atheist family and I'd heard about Jesus my whole life. I entered into a relationship with God in college and I started going to a lot of my friends who'd grown up in Catholic churches, Protestant churches such as Baptist, Methodist. You know, a lot of them didn't even know what I was talking about. And it was quite an education. I realized that people can be in church and not actually have a relationship with God. So where would you put yourself there? Would you say you've ever actually entered into a relationship with God?
I've never used that phraseology and asked, you know, to enter into a relationship. I don't believe I ever have.
Okay. And of course, there's nothing magic about the phraseology. You could have worded it any way you wanted to. But let me start, and this is not to put you on the spot. I'm going to offer a suggested prayer, and this is just something for you to think about and do on your own time. Here's something that I would suggest. Well, let me ask you, first of all, it sounds like you've interacted with the Bible enough. Do you believe the claims of the Bible? Do you believe that God visited this world as Jesus Christ? Okay.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so that's a great starting point, obviously. Because so if you believe God took the time to become a man, then right there that shows that God does want to reach down to us, doesn't he?
Yes.
If
I believe Jesus Christ is who he reports to be.
Exactly. And so, you know, some people say, well, you know, we can't move God. We can't change God's mind. God can do what he wants. That's all true. But if, on the other hand, God cared about you so much that he became a man and visited this world, then that shows you that, okay, if we want to be close to God and we're not able to really do it, who's got to make the move? God. So the very fact that you believe Jesus came, that's 90% of it. So I would suggest a prayer like this. And this is, believe me, think about it. We're not here to give altar calls. Think about it. But on your own, I would go to Jesus and say something like, Jesus, I believe you did die on the cross for my selfishness, my sins, and I want your spirit to come into my soul and show me that you're real. I want to have an actual experience with you, and if you'll do that, then I also ask that you change me. Give me the kinds of thoughts you want me to have. Help me to be the kind of person you want me to be. I'm not only asking you to forgive me my sins, I'm asking you to help me to sin less and follow you. You think that would be something you could think about during the week?
Yes, I will.
Okay, my friend, please call me back again next week. I really would like to talk with you some more, and I'm going to be praying for you all week long.
Thank you so much.
James, God bless you, my friend. We'll talk to you soon.
God bless you as well.
Bye-bye.
The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.